Good afternoon, everyone, and a very warm welcome, councillors and staff, members of the media. It would clear open this council meeting. And in doing so, can I introduce to councillors and staff our new committee secretary, Liz Spector. Liz is sitting on shotgun on Kim's shoulder today to learn about the system, and Liz starts in early March. Mm-hmm. Understand? Yes, so, right. Welcome,
Thank
Liz.
Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be here.
All right. Straight onto our agenda. We have apologies from Councillor Brown. I'll move that we accept that. As seconded, Councillor Hope. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. Leave of absence. We've got two requests, one from Councillor Kempton and one from myself. Somebody... I'm not going to move that I give myself a leave of absence. Thank you, Councillor Lawton.
Are we going somewhere together?
No. Can you please confirm that I have no idea where you're going and I'm not really interested. I'll put it all those in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Get carried. Thank you. In attendance, I think we're all comfortable there. Before we confirm the agenda, we do have a matter under urgency as an additional item in the in-committee section. It is an update on our head office. Is it the result, Mrs. Gardner, of a meeting on Monday afternoon, and you asked to bring this paper along. So... if council is comfortable, I'm happy to move that we add that item to the agenda under 16. We call it item 16.2.
Seconded.
Seconded, Councillor Noon. No discussion. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you.
Can I ask if papers exist for that?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We're getting a paper. Will we... circulate it now.
Can I have an electronic version, please?
I don't think it's up on the.
So we'll circulate that. Reminder of conflicts of interest. Has anybody got a conflict they wish to identify? Would appear not. Public forum. There are no matters under public forum.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. If I can speak briefly to public forum, of course. There was one application for public forum, and as I understand it, you as the chair declined that application. And that was an application from the Port Chalmers Waterside Union. I understand that you declined that application on the basis of legal processes. I sought clarification from the union in terms of, is that actually the case? As I understand it, the chief executive of the port has signed an eviction notice, but from the union's perspective, there are no legal processes of consequence. In fact, their view is that this council is showing favour towards the port as opposed to the union as a representative in our community. And to be honest, when I look at other processes for our public forum where groups basically rock up at the last minute, we don't basically know what they're to speak on or those particular issues, I find this whole process a bit difficult. And from my perspective, it's about a fundamental right and freedom of speech and for members of the community. These people are all ratepayers to be able to turn up at this at our council and say their piece. So, to be quite frank, I'm surprised and I'm disappointed with the approach on this matter.
That's fine. I took some advice and I was advised that there was matters of a legal nature, and so I used my discretion because it is available, and that was the decision.
And
so,
who determined that it was of a legal matter, can I ask, Mr. Chair?
I did, after seeking some advice. I asked Port Otago.
You asked Port Otago?
Yep. So, yeah. We're not going to discuss the matter because that's not what public forum is about, but...
Exactly. We're here to hear the matter and to ask points of clarification. So why would we not provide that opportunity for that particular group to say their piece, like we do for everybody else.
Not always. We do.
For example,
some in the past.
For example.
Oh, I haven't got the names in front of me, but we the normal process is that an application comes in and it's assessed by myself, and there are some criteria in our standing orders that it's assessed against. So, yeah.
And I mean, for example, so does that mean that everybody that comes to our public forum, you get clarification in terms of legal process? For example, when the Manuhiri Care group turn up here and they're quite obviously entering into a consenting legal process with this council, that no problem, say your piece. You know, is it a rule for one and not for the other, Mr.
No, it's
Chair?
Not. No, it's not.
It certainly seems to be.
Well, I disagree with you. Look, I'm moving on to the next item. I've made my decision.
There's no, that's fair enough. I'm not going to
There's not a discussion to occur under public forum.
No, but Mr. Chairman, can I ask a point of clarification from you? Yesterday, I understand that you got that legal advice, and I'm not seeking the dissent from your opinion or your decision, because that's your decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
And Councillor Scott's right to raise the justification of that decision and to question it, and that's fair enough. But it did seem that there was another solution, Stephen, and that was that if the Port Chalmers Waterside's Union was in some form of legal action or activity with the Port of Otago, the issue they wanted to raise was actually about saving a heritage building that the Port of Otago, as I understand, wished to demolish. Now, one of those officers of the Port Chalmers could have come as an individual and put their particular case for our interest, involvement, potential action. And all I'm asking, Stephen, in the future is that would have been a nice legal way of getting around this issue. And I just ask you in future if you might discuss with us the possibility of seeking a solution where that could be accommodated.
It's not my job to help them shape up their request. I just received a request. It was quite clear who it was from. It came via Councillor Scott, and so I assisted on those conditions. So yeah,
but I mean, to be honest with you, there's no legal reason for them not to have been here yesterday. It doesn't matter if they're in dispute.
I disagree.
Okay, then as a point of clarification, can you explain to me, please, why you would take that decision? That just because they are in, that apparently they're being evicted by the Port of Otago, that would mean they couldn't come to us.
So one of the criteria in the public forum, in our standing orders, where the chairperson has the discretion to decline to hear a speaker, is that the matter is subject to legal proceedings. And I had been made aware that that was possibly the case, so I asked the port to confirm that, whether that was the case or not, and they did confirm it. So I used my discretion at that point because the matter is subject to a legal process.
So can I clarify, so if the Port of Otago or any other of our organisations is taking legal action against an individual or an organisation or entity, we cannot hear them in the public session that precedes a council or a committee meeting?
No, it's not. Cannot would be too blunt. There is an opportunity for the chairperson to exercise discretion.
Okay.
If I could make one point, which arises out of this as well, it is that this is simply a matter of Port Otago negotiating with the tenant, right? And Port Otago has said they want to evict the tenant. Now, Port Otago owns property from North Cape to the Bluff. We do not get involved in the tenancy agreements, right? And in this particular case, this this tenant,
point
in
of
my
order,
view,
Mr. Chairman, you did rule that we weren't here to debate this.
Okay, but
so I think Councillor Kent is out of order. I think we can move on.
Yeah, I think we need to move on. And
that's fine, but we just need to be very careful about where we sit in the affairs of Port Otago. That's
correct.
The point.
Order, please.
Opinion to say about a lot of things. We haven't even given them the right to say them.
Order. We're moving on. Item 7 is presentations. We don't have any, so we'll move on to item 8.
We have one.
Which is confirmation of the minutes from the 12th of December council meeting. They've been circulated. Everybody comfortable they're true and accurate record? Thank you. Move to Councillor Bell. Seconded Councillor Hope. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Actions from those minutes. I'll just flick past that. Are there any? So we got one. It's in progress. So that's fine. We'll move straight on to the chairperson's report. You'll note we had a Chinese delegation through immediately before Christmas. Thank you to Councillors Kempton Scott and the staff that assisted for a very interesting discussion, as I've had in the past with Chinese delegations on environmental management and compliance and roles, and they're quite intrigued by the fact that nobody's above the law. Anyway, the only other thing I'm going to really touch on is sitting under the Queenstown Transport Governance Group. Staff have workshopped a list of opportunities for early interventions. In other words, whilst all the larger scale business planning is going on for the projects across the Waka Tipu, which takes quite some time to work through the process, there are opportunities to tweak the system to enhance the efficiency of the transport system. And simple things, I gave an example here of footpaths not being joined up, cycleways not being completed, maybe a bus stop in the right place. So there was actually quite a long list, Councillor Kempton, that staff come up with, and that might be able to assist. So that's being worked through, and hopefully there'll be some of those early interventions that are able to be put in place in a reasonably quick and efficient manner. Other than that, I'll leave my report as read. Are there any questions? Councillor Scott.
Yeah, the part that jumped out for me was the Otago South Mayor Forum in the point number 10, where Mayor Cole talks about that local government in New Zealand believes there's the need for a national adaptation fund to assist communities to adapt to sea level rise and climate change impacts.
Yes.
And I think that, I mean, I agree with that. And I actually think that the sooner we actually get on with working with central government to identify a fund, we'll start to face up with a lot more confidence about the issues in the future. I mean, I suspect in reality the fund would never be enough, but it could potentially be the seed of establishing principles and processes. And we've got South Dunedin here, and then we talk about other satellite areas. And there is going to be a financial and economic perspective to it, and central government needs to be a stakeholder in that. And I suspect so will local and regional government and the house owners themselves. And I think that this council should be working with, dare I say it, local government New Zealand to actually bring this to some type of conclusion, or not necessarily a conclusion, but a start. And we should put our heads to that about how we actually do that. So, like Mr. Chair, you're part of these processes. We've got Dr. Palmer here. If we were on the mine, how could we support something like that?
I think we just continue to encourage National Council of LGNZ to try to work with the Crown. Essentially, as my understanding, they're trying to get a commitment from the Crown that we need to be working on this collaboratively together. And there's been a number of reports, one just out recently, showing the scale of the issue with respect to infrastructure. And so, yeah, they're trying to work with the Crown to tackle this issue nationally. I'm not sure we could probably do too much else. Mrs. Gardner, is there anything you can add?
Well, it was discussed at the regional sector group meeting on Friday.
Yeah.
And so there is absolutely an appetite around the regional sector to have that engagement around a fund. Of course, when you have a discussion about a fund, it needs to be informed by some clear information about what the issues are, and I think that's the work that's been going on to date.
Okay.
So I think it's moving positively and in the right direction.
Good. Thank you.
The other comment I would make, and Mrs. Gardner will circulate an email with an update from our regional sector meeting on Friday, but what is very clear, and we've communicated, and I think we're all aware, that this government is moving at pace around environmental matters. There are a number of work groups, three work groups, with very tight timeframes to report in April. Ministry for the Environment has got a very large work program to pull it all together. There are seven or eight staff from across New Zealand out of regional councils seconded into MFE to assist. But some of the headings, which none of which are new and shouldn't be a surprise, that the minister will probably make some clear decisions on, are the need for farm plans linked in with catchment plans, the stock exclusion policy, feedlots / winter grazing / sediment, and cultivation, what we see it as spray and pray on hills, on steep hills, again based around sediment. And a focus on the at-risk catchments. So don't be at all surprised if there's some quite strong direction given by the Crown in the middle towards the second half of this year under those headings. And, I'll leave it at that. But Mrs. Gardner will give a fuller update in her email. On all OSG matters. All right, if there's no further questions, we'll move to the Chief Executive's report. Mrs. Gardner.
Thank you, Chair. I'm really happy to take this report as read. I have just highlighted there a couple of things that have happened since post-Christmas, and in particular the new member of the KEG, Robin Wallace of Ngaitahu. We're very pleased to have Robin on the KEG, and it's a great opportunity for us to ensure that we bring a cultural perspective into the planning that we do for emergencies.
Great. Questions of the Chief Executive's report. Councillor Deeka.
I wanted to say how pleased I was to see paras 26 and 27 under the recommendation heading about U3A Dunedin. I think that's a great idea, very significant audience. I've been lucky enough to be involved with three presentations, I think, to U3As in the last few years, and they regularly get over 120, 130 attending, and they're significant folks. And that is such a good audience for us to engage with in terms of getting out the message about our work, our goals, and our success. So I'm very pleased to see that, and I hope it comes off.
Thank you. Yes, we're looking forward to it.
Great. Councillor Kempton.
Just very briefly, I noticed I always like to read through the meetings, and you sure are getting around. But I was very interested in one where you met with the Institute of Directors without wanting to get involved in any confidences. What was that about?
That's actually because, having been a previous direct member, I've signed up.
Personal. Oh, that's fine. I'm wondering whether it appeals to me.
So it is yeah. about just having a connection in there, and actually it's quite useful. One of the things that I find incredibly useful about having that connection is some of the reporting that comes through the Institute of Directors, particularly in relation to the way that business and organisations need to respond to change. So,
yeah. Thank you. Yeah. That's great.
Mr. Law.
Thank you. Just in terms of following on from the U3A point, I've had many discussions with the U3A for Queenstown Wakatipu about being able to make those talks more accessible.
Mm-hmm.
They are incredibly valuable. I can think of a number of different stakeholder groups or, you know, interested parties, the university, for example, who would use the information coming out of this organisation, and anyone else interested in how, you know, regional council, local government works, also thinking about potential interest later this year. So is there some way of including the conversation in there about how to make that information accessible, for example, recording those presentations and putting them online, and in fact it could even be good for our own PR to have information available. It may be for the value of U3A that they, you know, don't want to have questions recorded, understandable, but the actual presentations, there's no real reason why we wouldn't be able to share those broader, hopefully. So if we could
Absolutely.
Look into that would be really valuable.
I'm really happy to do that. I think what we could do is ensure we can take the presentations ourselves. We have the ability to do that, and we can pop them on our website. That wouldn't be an issue. You know, obviously the currency will only run for a limited time because of the way that things change and the nature of our priorities change, but more than happy to do that. I think and that's part of the reason why I've taken up the opportunity, and I really appreciate the opportunity, because I think anything that allows people to become more informed about the work that we're doing is very important.
And too, in terms of the discussion with Federated Farmers,
mm-hmm.
We've had a number of discussions about where 6A is in terms
That's
of
right.
our engagement back with the community. Can you give us an update on where that work's got to?
Sure. So you had, I'll just remind you that I think it was about the 12th of December meeting, there was supposed to be a workshop, and there was a number of plans that were, or one pages that were in the back of your information. We weren't able to have the workshop on that day because we ran out of time. But I haven't let that sit. So the way that that's been progressed is continued to work with staff about that. You'll also hear about how that's been factored into annual planning, so that we can enliven those plans and make that happen. And where there have been requests around 6A and where we're going, you know, while we haven't officially landed the principles, etc., I think there was sufficient confidence around the table for us to start talking about that. The other thing that's really important, and we're starting to frame up for stakeholders, and in fact, I can't remember the meeting date, but we have an important meeting with various stakeholders, Dairy NZ, other NGOs, that sort of thing, coming up, and that's about how are we going to frame our conversation with the community on water moving forward, and what does that look like given that we're doing a water plan review. So that changes the context in which we have those discussions, and shifts us, as we were discussing this morning in the workshop, shifts us from, you know, having those topic-based discussions region-wide to having spatially focused discussions about those multiple issues, quality, quantity, wetlands, etc. So that's, I think, the way that we need to frame up the messaging about how those communication channels will work in the future.
Yep. Whilst also having the deadline date of 2020. So
Absolutely.
That's moving to
That's it.
Those.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Scott?
Yeah, point 22. The CEG approved the draft group plan for civil defence and emergency management in the region for escalation to the joint committee, supporting a recommendation that the plan be publicly notified. So I'd love to have a look at that document, bearing in mind our staff are... So what's the process for that document to come to this table, as it's been previously sort of discussed in terms of processes?
So the group plan can come to this table, but largely it would be for information because the, I guess, the construct in which it gets approved and worked through is the joint committee. So
joint committee being the mayors.
Being the mayors, that's right. The committee of the mayors and the chief executives as advisors to that. So absolutely happy to share the plan with you. It's still in draft at this stage. We've been through several iterations now, quite a substantial reframing and look at that in the last iteration. But I was pleased that we got it across the line with KEG, and I'm hopeful that we will also with the joint committee. Very happy to bring it to the next committee round.
Right. Joint committee's meeting on the 5th of March.
Yep.
5th.
Thank you.
All right. No further questions. Oh, Councillor.
That's right. Thank you. That's all right. I did it about it, sorry, for a wee minute, but I thought I'd ask it. I'm not being nosy. I'm on Trevor Kempton's trail here. When you went to the 28th of January, went to the Water Quality Forum in Queenstown. Mm. What was the most message that you took out of that? What'd you say that you're willing to share with us?
What I thought was really great was that it was really well facilitated and a very positive discussion. So I was really impressed by the number of people that attended, and I think just the level of engagement and energy around water quality issues and the willingness of people to be involved in those, and I think that that's a fabulous indication for us of what sort of engagement we can expect moving forward with our policy planning, but also with implementation of our current plans. So we need to build on that. And capitalise on those opportunities and also make sure that we make really good connections when that happens.
Thank you.
All right, I'll move that the Chair's and Chief Executive's reports are received. Second of Councillor Hope. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Kerry. Thank you. On to item 11 under matters for council decision, appointment of a hearing panel for the Otago Navigation Safety Bylaw. Mr. Winder's not here. No, that's all right. And all right, so council will be aware that we've been working through this process. And we have had out for consultation a draft Otago Navigation Safety Bylaw, as is spelled out in the report. There have been some submissions received, and we need to hold some hearings. In the way of providing some clarity, I would like to suggest under Recommendation 4, an amendment to that recommendation to read that the hearings panel comprises of Councillors Lawton and Scott with Mr. Cleaver, Mr. Lyndon Cleaver. And and Councillor Scott to chair that panel.
I'm happy to second that.
So, yep, seconded Councillor Kempton, and open the paper up for discussion.
Good.
Keen to get this one moving from a panel. The time's lapsed a wee bit, so we need to get the hearings held. Councillor Scott?
Yeah, I'd just make the comment that I see Mr. Lyndon Cleaver is the Environment Southlands Harbour Master, and he's previously been through this process. He's been there since 2011.
Yes.
20 years Royal Navy. No wonder Steve likes him. with Councillor Lawton, it'll provide that Central Otago perspective, where I think in Otago there are some, we need to have that holistic perspective.
Yes, and Councillor Lawton informs me that she's been involved in a similar process in QLDC.
Oh, very good.
Okay.
Yeah. So, thank you.
All right, Councillor Lawton.
Just a question, making sure
we'll have a discussion about the dates because there's a couple of times I'll be blocked out. So yes. As long as that works. Yep.
Yes. Yep.
I'll just accept the congratulations from council. That, and point two, that had I not reminded council that we already had a recommendation on the books, we may have ended up with two recommendations.
Yes.
One historical.
Yes.
Hysterical. Are we stepping in your toes, Councillor Neil? Did you want to?
My toes. I've got safety boots on.
Well, if we are, apologise.
Councillor Neil and I have had a conversation. I think Councillor Neil's perfectly happy. But
you don't.
But
you don't. You're wrong.
The earlier discussion was, as you say, so order, please. The recommendation covers off the fact that we revoke a resolution council made on the 11th of April, quite some time ago, in 2018. All right, any further discussion? Everybody seems quite happy. I'll put it. We've got a mover and a seconder. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against? Carried. Thank you very much. And yes, Councillor Lawton, the staff will be in touch ASAP to set up the hearings. All right. Item 11.2, and picking up the opportunity that has been identified for us to have some iwi representation sit on our policy committee. And welcome, Mr. McCabe. And so the paper quite clearly outlines the opportunity that is there and understanding the ability for council to make this a request, essentially. We're going to ask the Chief Executive to write a letter if it's supported. One thing I would just note is that it involves all the Runaka across both Otago and Southland, because as your councillors are well aware, the iwi boundary is the Clutha River, and clearly we've got some land south of that, so there is we need to be working with all from both parties, probably not actually involving Mirahiku Group or Okaha as such. It will be more at Runaka Chair level.
Yeah, so it's through you, Mr. Chair, that it's likely that Okaha will facilitate the conversation amongst the Runaka. So
Yeah. Good. Yep. Thank you, Mr. McCabe. And let's open up the paper for discussion. But what I'm going to suggest is that recommendation 3 is that we approve the Chief Executive writing to Te Runga, Runanga o Naitahu, inviting them to consider recommending representatives on the policy committee, and we don't actually quote Okaha and the Papatū Runanga. So we can just write to Naitahu and they will filter it out, perhaps through the 8 individual Runaga rather than...
Mm-hmm.
Would that be appropriate, Mrs. Gata?
I think so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. All right, open the paper for discussion. Councillor Laws.
This is a very, very, very significant change that's being proposed to the governance of the Otago Regional Council. And although it appears on the one hand to be just a relatively minor diplomatic procedure, it isn't. I'm also a little bit concerned about the understanding of public law that's interpreted in this paper, because it simply isn't correct to assert, as paragraph 5 does of this paper, or paragraph 3, sorry, that there are statutory obligations dependent upon the Otago Regional Council from those 4 pieces of legislation that are mentioned. That's simply false. And I don't know how on earth the research could be so bad that it would end up in a presentation like this to a governance body. In actual fact, what the Resource Management Act and the Treaty of and the Local Government Act of 2002 mention in particular is the word... Nowhere do they mention the word iwi. Nowhere do they mention the word tribal. they mention the word Māori. And in actual fact, I'll read Section 4 of the Local Government Act of 2002. It says, it's to take appropriate account of the principles of Treaty of Waitangi and improve opportunities for Māori to contribute to local government decision-making. Again, in the Resource Management Act, it is to take into account the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi, and it relates to Māori decision-making. And what has clearly been given here is not a practical enforcement of the principles of Treaty of Waitangi, but it is the favouring of one iwi within the bounds of the Otago Regional Council. Now, it may be true that that's our home iwi, for want of a better phrase or word, but it ain't Māori. And this is an issue that, for example, the Bay of Plenty Regional Council adopted. They didn't give representation to Tainui, for example, the predominant iwi within the Bay of Plenty. When they instituted Māori wards there, all Māori who are on the Māori electors registration are entitled to vote for those wards. It doesn't just say Tainui, or you have to be connected with iwi. I have no difficulty with us liaising with, meeting with, having serious conversations with, even partnering on occasion, policies that are relevant and relative to iwi in our area, and I believe that any consultation that we have with iwi is a good thing by its very nature. But this isn't what the Acts and what the legislation says. And before we go down this course, I think it would be useful for the council to have some form of legal opinion, particularly in the area of public law. Yes, I think that's enough. I do not want to see non-iwi Māoris excluded from this process. And it is certainly not in keeping with the pieces of legislation that are cited here for us to give an exclusive operation to one iwi.
Councillor Deacon.
Yeah, that, thanks, Councillor Laws, for that view. This is not new. This is something that's quite embedded in this council, and its relationship with, particularly with Ngāi Tahu. It dates back to the days when Duncan Butcher was the chair of this council, and that is that we recognise the mana whenua. And that status is held by Ngāi Tahu in our region and in every part of our region. That has been our constant partnership. We have had representation from Ngāi Tahu on their advice on our committees before. I don't think we need to rethink this. It's part of our tradition. This is a good step back into both the past and the future. And I'm very keen to see progress made as rapidly as it can be on asking Ngāi Tahu, who are our partner, to advise us on their selected representatives. I don't think there's any need to rethink or relitigate on this issue whatsoever.
Robertson, Councillor Bell and Councillor Long.
First of all, I think this is a great opportunity. I think, reflecting back your words, Chair, it is a great opportunity. It would be great to have a meaningful partnership and for that to be face-to-face and equal around the table. I hear what Councillor Lords has said about tangata whenua and their role and what Councillor Deacon has said. I think that we should write to Ngāi Tahu. They are essentially this area, the five Rūnanga that are mentioned here. I agree actually as well though with the Chair that it should be to Ngāi Tahu. and not Aukaha, because it's Te O Marama as well, and Southland equivalent. Should be determined by Ngāi Tahu what the correct channels are. I think it reads appropriately at the moment that it will come back to this council. Let's say we had 24 people that wanted to come on the policy committee. We need to have another think about that if that was the case. How we were going to sit everyone, that type of thing. So, yeah, just we need to have that. But I would have liked the paper to have a think as well about conflict of interest potentially through the RMA process. I think this is an opportunity for Ngāi Tahu to think about that themselves. But let's say you are around this table making decisions, then you are a submitter and a consent or a policy type setting. How does that work? So I guess that's up to Ngāi Tahu to think about how they engage in that and what's the best way to do that. But that's definitely a question as well.
Councillor Bell, then Councillor Lawton, then Councillor Scott.
I had a bit of a concern similar to Councillor Robinson. I was just wondering about the numbers there. It says that staff believe that they may choose from iwi up to four representatives from the Tauranga. But is there a legal requirement of numbers or not? And that was, I was visualising a whole lot might turn up and expect to be around this table, twice as many as what councillors are or whatever. I don't know how it operates.
No, so the conversation that occurred at our Mana to Mana meeting was around Ngāi Tahu having a process and having the conversations, and there would be two names recommended. Yeah. And that's my very clear understanding. And Councillor Deaker and Councillor Neil, I think, were at Mana to Mana. So a while ago now. So, yeah. Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. I don't actually feel that this paper was quite adequate for the points that everyone else is, well, others have already raised. Also in terms, but in particular, as Gretchen, Councillor Robertson was talking about, in terms of the bigger process. So one of the questions in particular, are they a voting member of the policy committee? Because that really needs to be clear. That's the crux. And then in terms of our own processes, what's a conflict resolution process there if the iwi representative is the only one to vote against something, or then how do we work through that? Ultimately, they'll end up with the submission and going back to what Councillor Robertson was talking about. Is that really the way that we want a partnership to work? Or are we... Or ultimately, a pre-meeting about any issues that we're having that would be brought to the policy table or any proposals would be worked through upstream. So what's then the relevance of them being around the table? This report doesn't go into the pros and cons of doing that. It just states one option. So there's, for me at the moment, there's quite a lot of questions about that. I could support that the report, that there's a discussion with Ngāi Tahu about this proposal, but then there needs to be all of those issues sorted through, I think, before we can, you know, I can vote on saying that that's the way it should happen.
Councillor Scott?
Yeah, I think the more we talk about it, the more I's need to be dotted and T's need to be crossed, and they need to be done in the appropriate way. Just going back to Councillor Law's point, I actually sympathise with that point. After saying that, I'm reluctant, as I suspect Councillor Deaker is, to, you know, jump into a ward system. I have actually spoken before with a Bay of Plenty Māori ward member, and that wasn't straightforward for them either in terms of the processes and how it all worked in reality. I suspect if we can get this right with Ngāi Tahu in a seeding way, then that's better than diving into full-blown war trying to get something that's perfect. But anyway, there it is. So what we're talking about is inviting these representatives to our policy committee. So it's actually quite interesting that, you know, like we're working with these representatives. Any recommendation from the committee, of course, would go to council, and those representatives would not be on council. So it could be an interesting situation if the vote was close, you know, at policy and a lot of backslapping and so forth, and it goes to council and the numbers change again. So that is actually quite interesting. I personally believe that any letter to Ngāi Tahu should say two representatives, not this up to four business. Where did that come from? You know, originally voting, communicating with the different Rōnanga, and of course they want a representative. So that's where we go to Ngāi Tahu, and they can sort out the politics, and they come back with two. And who's to say in the future, in terms of Ngāi Tahu, that we could grow up with a third person or whatever? And it needs to say, do they have voting rights? Because my understanding is they expect voting rights, and we haven't even got it in this report. Personally, I think they should vote at the policy committee for whatever it's worth, and that should be in there. And I think Councillor Robinson talked about conflict of interest, because we've been down this track before, and halfway through the process, the perspective of one of the representatives changed because of whatever dynamics and so forth. I think they did it on a voluntary basis as well. Like, we're all sitting here getting
paid.
What's that, sorry?
Do they get paid?
Yeah, well, exactly. And because I think that was a bit of an issue last time. We're all sitting here getting paid. And I think if they turn up for a policy committee, they should be compensated for that. Otherwise, they just disappear like happened last time. And I don't mean anything bad in saying that. It's just an observation. That's basically what happened. And with that, I would expect some attendance obligations. So, for example, myself as a councillor turning up here, if I miss ex-council meetings, committee meetings, or at some point, I'm gone. You know, so what are the attendance obligations? Because last time we went all through this with all the fanfare and it sort of fizzled out. So what are the expectations and obligations? I don't see all this in the recommendation. In fact, if it was me, I would come back with something a little bit tighter for this council to give consideration to. But on the other hand, I want to get on with it as well. I think it is, the big picture is, I think it's a positive move, working together constructively with their partners, and the sooner we do that, the better. But let's just do it on reasonable terms, because the loose terms have not worked in the past.
Ms. Gardner, is there anything you can respond to? Councillor Neil.
Okay, well, thanks, Mr. Chairman. And Councillor Scott covered a fair bit of really what I wanted to say. This has, and I believe this motion actually is probably a bit premature. There probably hasn't been enough work actually completely with Ngāi Tahu as well, and just what we really do want and how it will best operate. We had two members on the science technical/technical committee. I actually think that they were paid meeting allowances, but that's irrelevant. Well, it's not irrelevant, but that was the case. They were only on those committees. To me, the difficulty was that every committee is intertwined, and therefore they weren't necessarily privy to what had happened at the previous committee or at the subsequent committee, and so it was very, very difficult for them, and they almost, well, for them, I felt like they would have felt like the poor relation, because they were not
they were not necessarily up to speed because of what everything else was going on. So to my mind, I mean, we should be talking about, I mean, if we were going to have a member from Māori or from Ngātahu, the member probably should be a full member of council. And that's probably where the work, where the talk should be going to, because I just go back to this. It was not helpful for them on that committee, and it wasn't particularly helpful for council. So there didn't seem to be any winners, and I don't want to see a repetition of that. So I think we're probably premature with this motion.
So if I can just respond to that a wee bit, the conclusion previously was perhaps the wrong committee. And with the workload underway with our water plan and the impending workload, that was where the conversation was generated from. And so the policy committee was seen as the more appropriate opportunity to have be part of those conversations and have some input. Rather than where the detail is thrashed out, rather than at full council, which is just picking up in most cases the recommendations from the committees.
Can I clarify, as a point of clarification, if this motion is to be passed, does that mean that members, however many there are, 2-4 of Ngātahu, can sit round here, make a policy decision on, let's just say, FMUs, and then, as required under the Resource Management Act, have a second bite at the cherry, being a treaty partner and a... exactly. Is that right? And does that mean that the four Ngātahu people, what, act on behalf of themselves as individuals, act on behalf of Ngātahu, that they're bound, they bind Ngātahu by the decision that comes out of the ORC or by how their representatives work? I don't know the answer to any of those questions.
Scarlett, can you help there?
Sure, okay. I think there are a number of things that you've raised, and it's a fair comment that we could have put some more detail into the paper. I think it's important that we remember that this request came directly from Ngātahu, and they were quite forthright in what they were looking for, which was specifically to be on the policy committee. And I think it's a little bit about the sort of point in time that we find ourselves and the kind of work that we'll have coming through that committee in the near future. So my recollection is that it's, I think they were thinking of two. So I think that was right. And the assumption in the paper, and the reason why it's not specified, is the assumption was that they would be full voting members of the committee. excuse me. I think some of the issues you raise are not just common to having membership of Ngātahu in decision-making, but there are a number of places where councils themselves and others intersect with various processes. So in my experience, for example, you know, I've had councils who have been in alliances with people, agencies like NZTA on the one hand, but also made submissions on those very same applications for designations and other things on the other. And I do think that that's a little bit of the reality of the world that we live in, and we do have to be able to manage those things. So I think the conflict of interest is something that you manage on a case-by-case basis and through discussion. The questions you have around payment, etc., if you wanted to make an in-principle decision today, you could do that, and we could sort out the details later. However, if you'd like us to come back with further detail in a paper, we'd also be willing to provide you with that advice. I think the you know, the request that's been made does provide an opportunity for us, and as I say, it is a request that's made in light of the existing partnership we have, and also of the work that we have before us moving forward.
Mr. McCabe, anything you wish to add?
Oh, I guess the only thing I would add to it in relation to conflict of interest is that the Act allows for submitters and councils themselves to submit on their own plan changes. I don't see this as being any different in that case, and those decisions will be made either by hearings commissioners or ultimately by the court through the judicial process. Councils themselves can actually submit on their own on their own decisions and put that through the process.
Do you know what's missing? I'd love to hear from Ngāi Tahu. Now, you've heard it. I haven't heard it. I haven't had the opportunity to sit down, nor any of us, and hear exactly what's being proposed or what they understand. And I'd love to have that before I make a decision on this, and I think it would improve our decision immensely. What their expectations of a partnership with us is. Because do you know what? Partnership doesn't mean to me tokenism. And I'm hearing a good strain of tokenism in this, which is where we put two of them there and we say, there you are, I've got you sorted now. And that won't be their understanding of what a partnership with the Otago Regional Council is. They would have far more power and influence with us staying outside our organisation on that basis than they would be within it.
Chairman, point of order, this is a council meeting and we're having one person speak three times on
yes.
one motion.
Thank
it seems irregular.
Thank you, it is. Thank you for a reminder on standing orders. All right.
Can I move motion then? To satisfy Councillor Deacon, can I move a motion?
Has this motion been put, Mr. Chairman?
No,
has
no,
it been
but
moved?
This is an amendment to the motion.
Okay, that's fine.
So did we have a second, Kim, for the originally when I read out the recommendations?
I haven't got anybody that needs
no,
a second
I don't.
Yet. No.
No, don't think I did.
Well, I'll second it.
Right. As they are?
Yes, as they are.
Yep, right. All right, that gives us something to debate. I think again, from a mana to mana perspective, it was very clear that the request was for membership of the policy committee and to have voting rights. We've expressed that, and I think there is some details that need to be worked through, but we can certainly do that. Indicating support for the appointment of iwi representatives to the policy committee and asking the chief executive to write to Ngāi Tahu. We moved and seconded. Any further discussion?
Can I move an amendment, Mr. Chairman? Is
yes,
that
you can.
Possible? That this paper seeks further detail from staff as to the role and obligations, responsibilities. This paper seeks further detail. So we're seeking further detail in addition to this paper. Of any appointed Ngāi Tahu members to the policy committee. The understanding of Ngāi Tahu be clarified to their possible role.
Have you captured all that, Kim?
Yep. Do you want me to read it back?
Yes, please.
Motion amendment is that this paper seeks further detail from staff as to the role and obligations and responsibilities of any appointed Ngāi Tahu members to the policy committee, and that the understanding of Ngāi Tahu be clarified as to their possible role.
So that becomes motion 4. Is there a seconder for the amendment?
So, Mr. Chairman, I don't see that as a point 4. I'd have to ask the mover, though, but it seemed to be an amendment to the motion.
Yes.
As in quite...
Oh, that's a good point.
probably need to deal with the first motion first, the motion, and if it's lost.
So it'd be a foreshadowed motion.
Amendment first.
Yeah, you're right.
All right.
Sorry, Mr. Chairman, you're right. Sam's right.
Yes. All right, it's been moved and seconded. Any discussion? I'll put it. Can I have a show of hands, please? All those in favour, please say aye. Put up, raise your hands. Those against?
Hang on a minute.
This is the amendment.
I think they were expecting it first.
We have to do the first initiative first.
Yeah,
I thought you were putting the current recommendation.
No, I was putting the amendment first. That's the correct order, is it not? All right, so I'm putting the amendment. Everybody's clear on the wording? It's been moved and seconded. Those for the amendment?
Can you just keep your hands up? Sorry.
Sorry, you don't have to write our names down if it's not a division.
Just count the numbers. Okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6, 7.
Those against?
1, 2, 3, 4.
The motion is carried.
The amendment becomes the motion.
Correct.
The motion then has to.
I'll now put the motion. All those in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against?
Carried.
That's it. Item 12, matters for noting.
One of those procedural ones to inform council that of delegations that have been exercised since December, the middle of December.
A couple of warrants. Recommendation is that the council notes his report. Any discussion? Somebody prepared to move the recommendation? Mm-hmm. Councillor Scott, seconded Councillor Hope. I'll put it all in favour. Please say aye.
Aye.
Yes, carried. Thank you. Report backs from councillors. Councillor Deaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could I note that at the top of this report back, it should be meeting of the Central City Advisory Panel.
Yes.
It wasn't the Central Advisory Panel.
Yep.
Everything else about that is correct. There were three significant points discussed of interest to us. Probably of most interest is the inner city bus loop, which has been considered by at least a significant number of city councillors. And you can see as much detail as I could glean is put into point two. Then there was Pete Hodgson talking about the hospital rebuild, particularly its workforce requirements. And I've given you a very quick summary of how he saw that spread over the period from 2022 through to 2026. And then there was the presentation, and I've got copies of it here if anybody's interested. The city has developed for consultation on the redevelopment of the retail quarter, which is basically George Street and its immediate tributaries. They're intending to invest $60 million through the LTP in the comprehensive redevelopment of that part of the central city. So that was that meeting. It's a pretty heavy-hitting group, as you can see from the attendance. It's important that we maintain our representation on that, I believe, and I hope that I've made things clear. I'm happy to respond to any questions.
Councillor Scott.
Yeah, so this is the group that we appointed, Councillor Deaker, plus some other one or two councillors.
Councillor Kempton and Councillor Noon, I think, are...
Oh, you've got two groups
connecting
to Leiden. Oh, that's connecting to Leiden. Sorry.
If you give me another couple of minutes, I'll carry on to talk about that subsequent meeting of a different group.
Okay. So what is this group then? What is this group? Like, have we appointed you onto this group?
Yes. Mr. Donnelly.
That's right.
Mr. Donnelly.
My apologies. Yeah, it's the Central City.
So, okay. I know that when I... I sometimes, when I read in the newspaper, I sometimes wonder who's actually managing the buses. Is it this group or is it this council? And where does, you know, this inner city loop sort of fit in? Who ultimately will make the decision on that?
Mr. Chairman, that's a good question, but I think the first one was a light-hearted one. Clearly, contractually, this council provides public transport in the city, as Councillor Scott well knows, has known for many years. This inner-city loop is a suggestion from the City Council, and as I said, a significant group of councillors who consider this would be an enhancement of the central city. Particularly given the fact that when the bus hub opens, the length of Main Street from Moray Place south through to probably Frederick Street will be bus-free. And they see, therefore, an opportunity for a very different kind of bus service, a small, electric, counter-rotating bus loop into which people can hop off. We're talking buses, not trams. On which people can hop on, hop off, and have access to all the key parts of the centre city, basically from the museum south to the exchange. That's the suggestion. If Councillor Scott sees that as a takeover of the provision of Dunedin City buses, he's got a very agile mind.
I try to keep it agile, Councillor Denton. Thank you.
Right. There was a question in there, and Mr. Donnelly, you might be able to help, though, but who ultimately makes the decision on whether this is a goer or not?
Well, I can, just before Mr. Donnelly goes into that, I think it's important for us to go a week ahead to another meeting, which I can report on behalf of Councillor Kempson and Councillor Noon and the Chief Executive, who were all at a meeting of the Connecting Dunedin Governance Group.
Yep.
And here I can completely understand councillors' confusion because the two are very intertwined, if not to mention overlapping. But this Connecting Dunedin Governance Group is chaired by Mayor Dave Cull. It has a large attendance and it is looking at the whole question of the connectivity of people movement opportunities across the city at large, and I think it was provoked by the hospital rebuild and the other significant developments going on in Dunedin, which are going to cause for several years a great deal of traffic disruption, particularly on the two branches of State Highway 1 that go right through Dunedin. And this governance group is designed to deal with all the issues that grow out of that redevelopment in downtown Dunedin, not just George Street, but the whole of the CBD. Now, at that meeting, which was just last Thursday, so it was past the deadline for getting a written report, and I apologise for that, but if you'll let me carry on to give a quick verbal report on the matter and topic, which is the bus loop being proposed by some of DCC, it was agreed there that the staff members of DCC and ORC will get together and do some analysis on this possible bus loop and say what are its implications. There's already been a perfectly good consultant's report stimulated by Mr. Donnelly and Mr. Collings on its relevance, its possible conflict with our contracted routes. So no decision's been made. Further work is being done by the staff of both of our councils, which is a good move, to see whether this bus loop thing has got practical benefits or practical threats.
That's helpful to know.
Sorry, and I jumped in front of Mr. Donnelly because you asked him to speak.
Yeah, no. Mr. Donnelly, anything you able to add?
No, not particularly. I think it's been covered. It's very similar to the group in Queenstown, the Transport Governance Group there. They're an opportunity for us to discuss the issues initially with the TAs and NZTA, but ultimately anything that might get looked at, the decision comes back to this table for this council to make the final decision around what happens with public transport in both Dunedin and Queenstown.
All right, Councillor Hope.
Thank you. I just want to ask a question, if I may. Well, I just wanted to say well done to Councillor Deaker here, because he suggested the route should include the bus hub, and I think that's great. I don't know if you remember some time ago, it might have been 2 years, I remember a very elderly lady coming here concerned that she would no longer be able to get to the library, one of the Dunedin's assets on George Street. But all I'm saying is this would include, and it picks up those sorts of folk that probably aren't able to get there from whatever means they're not able to get there. Maybe they're just, you know, elderly, I don't know, transportation, whatever. But I like this idea that it's going to come along and do this loop. I think it's great. Well done.
Well, no, we'll leave the staff to do their work on that one. Right, are there any other council report backs? Councillor Lawton.
Thank you. I just wanted to also include in what could have been your update as well around the launch of the opening of the Queenstown office.
Well, yes.
And
yep.
It was a really good event, actually better attended than I thought it was going to be. All our sort of key stakeholder partner, community partner groups were there, including a really good show from the Queenstown Lakes. Chair Woody gave a good overview of the work that we were doing in the Wakatipu and Upper Clutha, and I think it showed that there is a considerable amount of work happening there, and that the office is a good place for, I guess, that to be shown. I think I heard from people sort of in terms of the day-to-day use of that office of the public, it may not be helpful, but that there is a presence was greatly appreciated. I also reminded everyone that was there that the office has video conferencing capability, and in fact that allows for our the people of at that side of the region to know that they have access to us for before council meetings, public forums, and workshops and things that they can come and present and talk to us that way, and it doesn't that isn't a 3.5-hour drive to get here. And so really I just want to say thank you, and it was well received. And plenty more work to do, but it's a really good step in the right direction. So it was really nice. We stood around and had a drink together and a yarn, and I think it was incredibly valuable. I also attended the Lower Manahere Care field day last week, and I thought I was going to get a report written, but I didn't. Another good opportunity for discussion between those community stakeholders, well put together by the McKee group, and appreciated in terms of the attendance by the council staff and councillors. So it was really good. There was a really amazing case study. We went up to the the winery, MacArthur Ridge, yep. And I didn't actually realise the amount of water required for frost riding.
It's huge.
Huge. Mm-hmm. What was it? I think two or three times the amount that they use for irrigation.
Yes.
And it's just for those small number of key number of days, sort of average of 20 days, I think it was a year.
Yep.
So really interesting to get an insight from that perspective. And obviously it's the value of the conversations, both online and offline, in those situations. And I don't know if Councillor Neil or Bell want to add anything to that either.
No, that's fine. Thanks.
Perhaps just adding a little bit to that I'd just like to say that having the two ORC staff being Andrew Newman and Julie there was very good, because the feedback that I got back from that was great. But the feedback that I did get was the positive comments coming out of Andrew, and that was Andrew's knowledge and knowing how to build up that relationship with those people, and that's all parties. And that, I believe, is going to be the strength for us to help go forward from here.
Pete as well, who'd been walking the river and gave some...
Yes.
Yeah, yep. Pete Ravenswood.
Science.
Yeah.
Good. Thank you. No further councillor report backs?
Perhaps I could just Councilor add Bell. Something. I did touch at our committee meeting about when I was in the Queenstown for the Water Forum, I ended up being in Ferrymead Road, Ferry Morven Road, talking about rabbits. And Ames Batrick, the environment officer in Alexandra, is getting out pamphlets now to all those landowners in that area,
yes,
to help educate them on their responsibility of the requirements for rabbit for pest control. And also from that, Lynn Hamilton and I have been talking along with Haynes, and we'll hopefully have a combined meeting with all those people as the next step after that, and it's to try and get that community involvement. And I just believe that we've got to build on that into other areas. And and it's more of a question, and I'm not sure whether I'm allowed to ask or not, but in today's paper, it says that there's a new subdivision going in at Stratford Station at Lowburn there of more rural subdivisions, which are sort of 2 to 4 hectare type blocks. Again, I'm wondering about what part we are playing in that consent role with pest destruction, and also the education of those who will potentially be urban owners, I would imagine, yes, may well relocate into that type of environment. And with Councillor Law's awareness of what goes on just with the neighbours of Lowburn, but across the road, just lost it. It is important that we get this education program in it, and it's equally important that we do get involved with those hearings also.
Scotty, just note that point.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep, follow that up. Yeah.
Just
all right.
Add one thing for sort of a report. It's just a clarification. For colleagues, yesterday I contacted Sarah and Stephen, thank you for your responses, to do with non-swimming notice that had gone up at Lake Dunstan, issued by the Central Otago District Council and the Southern District Health Board. I didn't know anything about it. The LRC didn't know anything about it. And yet those were put up. Will we have any future involvement in that, or is there any way in which we are generally known? It just seems strange that these notices going up in prominent areas, but the LRC is not being informed yet. They seem to rely on our data to put them up. Is that right?
It's part of their consent. So they do some consent monitoring, and as part of that, if they find an issue, they put the signs up, as I understand it. What I've done since yesterday, because we did have some knowledge of it internally when I asked questions, but what I've done since yesterday is asked the manager of the science team and also the manager of our stakeholder engagement team to put their heads together and make sure that we have a robust process so that we are aware of those things when they come about.
Good. All right. Move on to section 15 of our agenda. Recommendations. Firstly, the recommendations from the policy committee. Thank you. Is there a seconder?
Seconded.
Councillor Laws. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. The recommendations from the regulatory committee. Councillor Scott. Seconded. Councillor Neil. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. The recommendations from the communications committee. Councillor Deeker.
Move.
Seconded. Councillor Hope. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. Technical committee.
I'll move.
Councillor Noon. Seconded. Councillor Lawton. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. The recommendations from the public portion of the Finance and Corp. I'm happy to move those. Seconded. Councillor Noon. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. Item 16. I'm prepared to move that we move into publicly excluded for the reasons outlined, to take the two items that we discussed earlier. Is there a seconder? Councillor Neil. I'll put it. All in favour, please say aye.
Aye.
Against, carried. Thank you. you. I declare the council meeting closed.